Now on Documentary on News Talk, Rachel Ryan explores what life is like for the siblings of people with additional needs in Ireland today, in Siblings.
Happy, intelligent, and amazing.
He's funny, outgoing, and talented.
Smiley,
gorgeous, loving.
Incredibly intelligent, incredibly strong, and just the heartiest laugh. It's infectious. Like, there's just no better woman to get a crowd going.
Little Miss Sunshine.
It can be hard to sum up your sibling in three words because, let's face it, our brothers and sisters can mean so many different things to us. Some days you're best friends, other days you wreck each other's heads. As author Erica E. Good put it, sibling relationships outlast marriages, survive the death of parents, and resurface after arguments that would sink any friendship. Among the countless sibling journeys taking place in Ireland right now are those where one sibling just happens to have an intellectual disability.
They would certainly flag it as a different type of relationship, and many of them would have really spoken about a very strong bond, that they really had a strong bond and that they had it from a very young age and that it has continued. And I think they would, in many cases, see it as a stronger and a more affectionate bond than they might have with their other siblings, and something that they expect to continue in a level of closeness, I suppose, that they don't expect to have with other siblings. So it definitely is a particular type of sibling relationship, a very special relationship.
Dr. Maura Lann works at the School of Applied Social Studies at University College Cork. In 2016, she and her colleagues carried out a study into the relationship, role and support needs of adult siblings of people with intellectual disabilities. 25 siblings took part in the study, and while the report showed these sibling relationships are incredibly important, it also revealed the role is often overlooked.
What keeps coming up again and again, we run a course here, I run a course for people with intellectual disabilities. But the one thing that I kept seeing was that it was so many of them were coming in with their siblings who were looking after them, or siblings who were doing all the negotiation because parents got too old. And I was saying, where are siblings in all of this? They're just kind of lost in it. Kind of sparked me thinking about the whole issue of saying, what goes on for siblings?
As the sister of a sibling with an intellectual disability, this study got me thinking about the role siblings play in the life of people with additional needs. How important is this relationship? Is it overlooked? What challenges face these brothers and sisters? And what supports are available to them? I decided to head around the country to meet some of these siblings, to hear about their own individual experiences, and to get a snapshot of what some of these relationships look like in Ireland today.
I am the eldest of four. Deirdre is number three. I am 33 years old. I've grown up in this area, two babies, and then I'm married to Rob, who's an Englishman. Yes, I'm, for my sins.
In Castle Knock, I met Sinead. She told me about her family.
There's myself, then there's my brother Sean, then there's Deirdre, and then there's my brother Michael. So it's girl, boy, girl, boy. When Deirdre was born, I was about 6 years old. So really didn't understand what was wrong. Like, her genes were different. And I, of course, thought it was genes as in the clothing. And I was like, I don't understand how that can impact a baby. But anyway, years later, I figured it out. When I was younger, I was kind of not sheltered from it, but I suppose mum and dad took the brunt of everything. So I got to see very little of it. But when my youngest brother, Michael, came onto the scene, I would have been 10. So at that point, mam still had Deirdre, who was still in nappies and needed an awful lot of care and looking after her. So at that point, that's when I really stepped up, because I used to help out with Michael so mam could focus on Deirdre. From that point onwards, I suppose I just, my role kind of was helping mam, because my dad travelled a lot. So I was always like helping put one of them to bed. So that is really when I suppose my role as a sister changed slightly, that I didn't see her as just Deirdre. It was like Deirdre who had special needs, who required extra assistance. They did sit us down and say, like, when Deirdre was born, they were like, Deirdre's going to be special, you know, a special sister for you, Sinead, and sister for you, Sean, because she just needs more attention. than you guys will need, because they were told she'd never walk or she'd never talk or she'd never do a lot of things. So Mam and Dad were kind of like, we don't know what the world will hold for Deirdre, but we just have to take each day at a time.
I think one of the things that came out that surprised us was that as children, many of the people we spoke to weren't really clear about the nature of the disability.
Dr. Maura Lanigan from UCC.
Or they didn't necessarily have a name for it, or they didn't really know what it might mean down the line. So that information was a big issue, that they would now, looking back, say they would have liked to have had more information, to have been included more by professionals. So they felt kind of, whilst they were doing a lot of day-to-day, in a way, care work or support work with their parents, just as children, that they weren't included when a social worker would come in or when there would be a medical appointment, that they weren't included or consulted. Support for children when they are children who realise they've got a brother or sister who's somewhat different, they would be supported to understand what roles are being played by themselves and by their parents and by the person with the intellectual disability, so that they have that information and awareness from a very early stage.
Being a teenager can be an angsty time for most people. Sinead told me about her experience of growing up with Deirdre and how having a sibling with additional needs during those adolescent years can bring on a range of emotions.
As I had friends who had siblings, and it highlighted, you know, the difference, because they'd be like, oh, I'm meeting my sister, we're going to go cinema, or my mum and I are going out and doing this. We couldn't really do that. Like, I mean, yes, you can go out with Deirdre, but like, it's very distressing for Deirdre to go out because it breaks the routine and she doesn't know when she's going home and she wants to know what time she's going home. And it is bad, but like, I mean, it's just one of those things, you feel all the emotions under the sun and you're kind of like, now it's fine, but when I was younger you were, because you'd go out and she'd start screaming and like rolling on the floor and you're like, I'm so embarrassed. I wasn't mature enough at that stage to like be able to be ballsy and be like, yeah, my sister has an intellectual disability, like, go away. Like, I was very defensive, but I suppose I never really did it diplomatically. Like, I mean, I remember giving out to somebody in mass because they were staring at Deirdre, do you know what I mean? But like, I wasn't very diplomatic. I was like, I'm going to kill you if you look at my sister again. Obviously not great when you're in church, but as I got older it was easier, do you know, and I could understand why I was, back then I was embarrassed. Now if someone looked at her they could look away and I wouldn't care. But I suppose, yeah, it was like sadness, embarrassment, and then just anger that you're like, why did you have to just stare at her and I had to see you stare at her?
Despite the different emotions Sinead felt growing up, like all of the siblings I spoke to, she would do anything for Deirdre, who is, above all else, her sister.
Friends from when I was in school would have said, like, there's so much pressure on you, like, your parents expect so much of you. Because I used to mind, like, Mam and Dad needed a break, mother of God, so I'd babysit, but my friends would be like, can you come out? I was like, no, I can't, I'm babysitting. And I used to take her at the weekends and we'd do things and my friends were always like, you have no life. But I did it because I wanted to, you know, I wasn't being told, you need to do this. Mam and Dad take her all the time and have her all the time. So I was like, I don't mind if I take her for a few hours on a Saturday. It's not a big deal. I don't feel like I was hard done by. I don't feel like I had a hard life. This is just the norm. Like I said to them, I was like, I don't see why you think I'm being hard done by or why there's so much pressure on me, because I never saw it like that.
Deirdre is currently attending a nearby day program. And while she lives with her parents, she is very much a part of Sinead's growing family.
Like, she's now an aunt and like she's besotted with them, and that's where she's really starting to come out of herself. Deirdre would look to me quite a lot. I mean, I take her over for sleepovers, you know, when Mam and Dad go away. But I definitely think siblings are, you know, not considered, because my younger brother, who lives at home, does an awful lot for Deirdre. But I don't think there's a very good network for siblings. You know, I have never ever spoken to another sibling who has a sibling with disabilities. I've never spoken to one. So I don't know. I've never kind of conversed and been like, do you find this? How do you deal with this? What would you do in this scenario? I never had that. I think it would be so beneficial. Why can't there just be a forum for like questions siblings have about having a sibling with disabilities? Like, why can't there be something like that?
While there seems to be a lack of sibling-focused help for adults throughout the country, slowly more support is appearing for younger siblings. SibShop Ireland was founded in 2017 by Linda Foley and Liz Fitzpatrick. I met them in a hotel in South Dublin.
The goals of them would be for peer-to-peer support. That was our biggest thing. We noticed that, you know, siblings needed each other.
Linda Foley.
There are events for children aged 8 to 12 for siblings of children with special needs. So they run for children aged 8 to 12. So they're 80% fun games, interaction, lively games, and then 20% discussion activities. So that was the big thing for us, is to have that peer-to-peer support. And then for them to discuss the common joys and any concerns they have about having a sibling with special needs, and to discuss experiences they have and share those things.
Liz talked to me about why she felt there was a need for SibShop Ireland to be set up.
Linda and I are both nurses working in the area of intellectual disability, and we could see that there was a need in our own organisation for support for siblings. Parents had asked us, they were concerned about their children, or even if they weren't concerned about them, they felt that they could do with support. A lot of organisations provide sibling support but not sib shops, and the difference there is sibling support is where you would invite children in and you might have, you know, do some games and have a bit of fun, but an actual structured sib shop specifically talking about their, you know, experiences that they can share with each other, their difficulties, their worries, and that is really what is different from a sib shop as opposed to an ordinary sibling support group.
Sib shops are relatively new here in Ireland, and they're able to give Liz and Linda a great insight into the experiences of young children in Ireland who have a sister or a brother with an intellectual disability. It gives them a platform to share their worries, but also their positive experiences with their sibling.
A big need for information is there for the siblings. Parents have a need for information and siblings have that same need. And that's what the research has shown. A lot of times that will come up, that the child is worried that their parents are away in hospital and what's wrong, and that fear of what's wrong with their brother or sister. So it's really good when they support each other in that, because that's obviously a discussion activity where another child will say, oh, my sister or brother was in hospital as well. Another concern would be embarrassment and isolation from their parents. And again, that would be quite common. A lot of the positivity is around that they make them happy and smile and laugh. A lot is around smiling and laughter, isn't it?
Yeah. Another lovely game or discussion kind of activity we do is, which is positive, as a positive slant as well, would be where we would put a little message in a little capsule and the children would pick one, and it says, a time when I was proud of my sibling, a time when I was sad about my sibling, a time my sibling embarrassed me, a time I was happy with my sibling. So there's lots of positives and negatives and positives that we throw in all the time. And then they love telling, you know, funny stories as well, and everybody else laughing, all the other kids are laughing.
The importance of the relationship between someone with an intellectual disability and their brother or sister, and the need for that sibling to be supported from an early age, was summed up perfectly by Liz.
Siblings have the longest lasting relationship with that person with special needs, and yet they're the young people that don't get any support. And that's a very long relationship, 60, 65, 70 years. If you asked any parent in an organisation whether their child has, you know, Down syndrome or is on the autistic spectrum, none of them would say that they could take that journey on their own. They all look for support. Even if they're not in an organisation, they will look for their local branch. And yet we, as a society, expect children to do this alone. Like, when you put it like that, you know, you can see there's such a big need for sib shops, some, and sibling support.
It appears that there is less help for siblings the older they get, something which Liz and Linda hope to address. Don Myers, he's the creator of sib shops, and he's also set up Facebook groups for siblings to connect from all around the world.
John Myers has sib teams in the States. There's none here yet. That's myself and Liz for SibShop Ireland. That's our next focus, is sib teams. At the moment, with John Myers, he's the Sibling Support Project, which is his baby as such that he set up. And within that, there's the sib teens, the sib 20s, and the sib net groups. And they're groups that are closed Facebook groups for siblings to support each other from anywhere in the world. So I don't think enough people know about those groups. Within our service, there's no support for adult siblings. Down the road, it'll probably be 2020 by the time we get looking at the sibling support groups for adults. But if anything happens in 2019 that we can start it sooner, great.
For many of the adult siblings I've spoken to, their focus is on making sure their brother or sister has a full, meaningful and inclusive life.
Inclusion Ireland is an advocacy organisation working to promote the rights of people with an intellectual disability. We were set up in 1961, so we've actually been around a very long time. But the main part of our work is promoting people's rights, promoting self-advocacy, providing information and support to families, and also lobbying the government on issues of concern to people with intellectual disability.
Sarah Lennon is CEO of Inclusion Ireland.
I mean, a lot of people with intellectual disability prefer having their sibling to provide support than their parents for lots of reasons. Really, they're closer in age. They might feel they've more in common. We've had circumstances where people have maybe had, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends and wanted to talk about contraception and couldn't do that with their parents. Who could? So the sibling support can be absolutely a crucial part of it as well in terms of opening doors for people. But it can also have, yeah, an impact on the sibling and their relationships and their family relationships. Inclusion Ireland would have been involved in some research a few years ago where that was very clearly kind of coming out of the research that it's an assumed support when maybe we can't always assume that the support will be there from the siblings, and also how important it is. Maybe there's a person with a disability and the sibling needs to care for them. The chances are the parents have gotten older too and maybe need care as well. So I think we've acknowledged, look, the role that carers play, but in a lot of cases, yeah, the siblings are the forgotten part of that whole question.
Inclusion Ireland's vision is for people with an intellectual disability in Ireland to live and participate in their communities with equal rights and to live the life of their choice to their fullest potential. One major area in Ireland that needs to be more inclusive is employment. According to the 2016 census, just 17% of those with an intellectual disability of working age are in employment.
At a time where the country is moving towards full employment, we still have a large group of people who have never been on the live register. In some ways, if you're in receipt of a disability allowance, you're almost labelled with not capable of working. We know that most people can work to some extent, maybe not full time. And for a lot of people, it's one of these Irish things, you know, the first question you ask people is, what do you do? And for a lot of people, particularly with intellectual disability, having a job would represent more than just earning money, although that's important. It's also about their status, about having something to talk to people about, you know, in terms of social situations too.
So my name is Graham. I am the cupcake bloke. My brother Patrick has Down syndrome, but I will refer to him from now on as Pappy because that's what I call him. He is 3 years younger than me, and yeah, he works with me. We spend so much time together, it's brilliant.
Growing up in Kildare, Graham says himself, Patrick and their siblings have always been very close from a young age.
I remember one time, Pappy had this great ability to, if he was tired, he would just sit down on the ground. That was it. So it was. He could be anywhere in the middle of a shop and he would, but that's it, he's not moving. So kind of like our jobs as kids that were so similar, we'd sit down on the ground with him until he was ready to go. So to us, that was kind of the norm. We grew up in the main street of the town. My father had a butcher shop. Living on the main street, we were each other's friends. That's why we spent so much time together.
Graham is passionate about getting more people with intellectual disabilities into the workplace and is very thankful that he was able to offer his own brother a job at his bakery.
It has changed him so much. I will say, being his brother and having the language to deal with Pappy is different. Communication with Pappy is more than just signs. It's knowing him so well and so many lip reading and body language, everything. There's so much involved in understanding him. So there is a little bit of a difference here. I'm very lucky that I started my own business and was able to employ him. He now works 3 days a week. I'm trying to convince my parents to let him work a fourth day. I think after he was started 1 day a week, and after about 2 weeks I was like, oh, can we have him a second day? And it's trying to make people realise he's not here just to make him feel special and fulfil his time. He's here to work, and he works. Even when I'm not here, like, he just gets in and gets on with the work. He's able to see what needs to be done. He preempts what I need. We're a small little team. We're start off business. We have a lot of work on. He just brings a calmness to the kitchen as well, which is always a bonus.
Visiting the busy bakery at Smithfield, I could see how efficient and passionate the small team are. All of the staff echoed Graham's words about Patrick's valuable contribution to their team. Jer has been at the bakery now for 6 months.
It's not just to give him something to do. He's a very valuable, one of the most valuable members of the team. And he knows what needs to be done next. You don't have to tell him what to do. He just knows instinctively what we need.
Graham says that Patrick being employed has given him confidence and independence that has spread to other areas in his life.
If you had told me 4 years ago he was moving into an apartment on his own, no way. But he's had 4 years of regular employment, of travelling on his own. I see the independence he's developed in the last 4 years. Maybe it has taken him 37 years to get to that point of his life where he's now like, I'm a young adult, I'm going to get my life sorted, and he's just getting on with it. Don't get me wrong, he needs his key workers and all this sort of stuff. But it's just, he's capable of more. And this is because the work has come along. And seeing the confidence that he has. If the bus is late, he'll Snapchat us and we use emojis through Snapchat if he's running late. And like only a few minutes ago, I got a Snapchat. We're going down to visit the apartment for the first time tomorrow. And a little emoji of the house and a slice of pizza because we're going for pizza tomorrow night down in Maynooth. He's never had a pizza ordered to his house. And he's going to do it tomorrow night. It's normal. I have a job, you have a job, Pappy has a job. Why shouldn't he have the fulfilment of a job and getting a wage pack at the end of the day in his payslip? The day of residential care is gone, and the day of treating people with special needs just with normality is here. And it's just like, parents can't be expected to be 24/7 carers. Siblings are going to have to step up and say, right, you're having a weekend off, Mish, and Pappy or Jimmy or whoever is coming to stay with me. I always have this thing of like showing Pappy experiences, because that's what makes them stronger and better and more able to cope with life and focus on life. And like, I've brought them to Lapland, I've brought them to Euro Disney, and like, it's great for me, don't get me wrong, but it's also great for him. And siblings need to step up and be there for day-to-day caring as well as like respite, because even trying to get respite for parents is tough nowadays. So siblings need to come in there and say, right, I'll step up to the mark.
You're listening to Siblings on Documentary on News Talk.
One of the key areas in which siblings will need to step up is in the future care for their brother or sister. Dr. Moore Lanigan.
It's hugely different, and I do think siblings will have a big role to play in that.
In her study, she found future planning for people with intellectual disabilities and for their families is massively important, but isn't always happening.
Greater planning supported decision making around what are we going to do as a family? What does the person with intellectual disability want to do? You know, do we have a sense? Have we consulted them? What might be options? How might we share things? What might care look like in 3 years, 5 years, 15 years? So getting people to actually, as a family, engage with those questions before they become crisis or before somebody just kind of falls into a practice and everybody lets them get on with it.
56% of people with an intellectual disability over 18 live in a home setting. That's according to figures from the National Intellectual Disability Database. 9% of these live with their siblings. With a move away from institutional care into family settings, it's obvious why discussions between families about future planning is so important, and to do it sooner rather than later. In Leixlip, I met Pascalina. She lives with her partner Michael and her youngest sister Liz.
So I'm the eldest. Then there's Angelina, Victoria, then Anthony and Elizabeth.
Pascalina is the eldest of five kids, and she remembers when Liz was born.
When she was born, she was in hospital. She was going to die the day she was born. She never really came out of hospital then. And my mum was up and down to the hospital, and like, we'd no car. So my memory is always standing in the freezing cold at a bus stop, going up to see her.
Life for Pascalina and her siblings changed suddenly when, out of the blue, their mum passed away.
18 years now. Bit of a showstopper. It was Christmas morning. Liz went in to wake her up. And Anthony, I think, did they all go in yet to say, Mum, it's Christmas? She was gone. Liz came to live with us because Angelina was only in her 20s, Victoria was only in her 20s, and then Anthony, I think, was only 18. I was 30, Mike was 31. We were working hard, playing hard. I guess our life was turned upside down. So we'd no children. Then suddenly we had a responsibility, so I had to change job. But we just naturally became a unit.
Given the suddenness of their mum's passing, there had been no formal discussion about Liz's future care, but Pascalina says there was no question of where she would live. Liz was, and very much is, central to all of her siblings' lives.
Liz, then, she became the focus of everybody, the focal of the five siblings. As I said, we were working hard, you know, with our mortgage, everything. When my mum died, then we were just automatically a family. And because, I always say this, because I always really conscious about Michael's family, because I'm around them 29 years, people would have said, oh, you know, do you not want children, or does Michael want children? And I always say, because he has been so supportive of my family, that if he really wanted a child, we would have gone for it, like, but he never actually said. So he was happy with our family unit. You know, she goes everywhere with us, you know. But in fairness, she is an absolute angel. Like, she's no bother at all. And, you know, our older aunts and stuff like that, you know, people are a bit ignorant and, aren't you very good? And, you know, they say the most funniest things. And where I think, we're lucky to have her.
Sarah Lennon from Inclusion Ireland says that socially, there's still a huge challenge when it comes to inclusion.
That's probably the biggest challenge. We talk a lot about kind of inclusive, you know, integrated and inclusive living, employment. I think the socialising part is still probably a big challenge. So there is things like, you know, Special Olympics and art clubs. And again, they're sort of special social environments. When we talk about kind of the mainstream social environments, it can be much harder for people to get involved. Situations like where somebody might have a personal assistant will really help. So we would work with people here who would never have integrated into their community, but maybe have a personal assistant now who will bring them down the pub, will help them connect with their local library, will help them get involved in the local bingo hall or whatever it might be, whatever their interests are. A lot of people really enjoy Special Olympics. A lot of people really enjoy art clubs and enjoy that as an outlet, but also to offer people an opportunity to go to their local trad session or go use their local facilities as well alongside everybody else. It's really just about kind of putting in place a bridge for people. Once they're over the bridge, they tend to be fine, but that jump from having kind of an excluded life into having an included life, that can be the biggest barrier, I think, just that jump that people have to make.
In Galway City, I met siblings Laura and James.
It's just me and my brother James in our family, and then my mum and my dad. I think we've got a pretty good relationship, you know, we're pretty close. We hang out a lot. So I was in senior infants, I think, when James was born. So I just remember my parents, you know, told me from the get-go that, you know, he has Down syndrome, and but it was never really an issue. I think it definitely did help to know he was special and he just needed a bit more assistance with stuff. I think it was a good thing that I knew, because, you know, he did get that little bit more attention. So, you know, that would have been a bit of like jealousy there, but at the same time, I kind of knew that there was a reason for it.
Laura says that James definitely had an influence on her career choice. She currently works at an arts program for people with intellectual disabilities called Arts Alive.
2 days a week I work in Arts Alive, which is follow on arts program. It's all under Brothers of Charity. We do classes and courses and the things they're interested in. So we have lots of writers. It's amazing. Two people are writing their book, another girl is writing a script. Definitely think people need a choice, and I think for so long, you know, people were going places and they were just like doing stuff. And I saw it even with James before he went to Blue Teapot. He was in a day centre and there was just no motivation. Just my experience in Arts Alive, that, you know, everyone comes in the morning, they're enthusiastic. That's something, I suppose, in the Brothers of Charity, they're trying to move more towards that. You know, they're going to have like people with intellectual disabilities on interview boards now as well. So I think that's amazing, you know, it's really kind of forward thinking.
Studying and working in an area that interests you is always key to ensuring a full life. James has been at the Blue Teapot Academy, a performing arts school and program for people with intellectual disabilities, for 3 years.
The Blue Teapot is really, really good. It's all about performing in the art school. We do some different stuff, physical theatre, drama, doing sewing and all different activities. Acting is really good part of my life. I just keep on doing acting in the future and see what happens.
Meaningful jobs are incredibly important. So too are meaningful social lives and hobbies. Recognising this need, Laura started DJ workshops to pass on her own DJing skills and established Bounce Nightclub in Galway City.
I had the idea for a long time and I was doing DJ workshops. So that's life run this thing called Club Tropicana once a year. So we were kind of discussing before, it'd be great to get the guys more opportunities to DJ, not like, so it's not just once a year, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, I was out one night with Claude and I just mentioned the idea of Bounce and Club Night and he was like, yeah, let's do it. We have at the minute, I think probably 7 now DJs in training. And yeah, it's really nice little group. The workshops have kind of become not just DJ work lessons, but also like it's a collaborative thing, Bounce. So we discuss what themes, the music. We kind of have a discussion for about an hour usually in every workshop.
For Laura, it was important to set up Bounce Nightclub in a venue where anyone would have a pint.
I definitely found that with any of the discos James is going to, one of them's in like a school hall and they're adults. Why are they going to a school? It's funny though, there's still like kind of fear there from like some parents, maybe siblings, about being in the Roisin Dove, because I suppose there's drink available. And the thing is, anyone can come in. It's geared towards people with intellectual disabilities. But if some people want to come in and check it out who don't have a disability, they're more than welcome. Thing is, we have like a really good staff team there and everyone's kept safe all the time. So I suppose the biggest challenge was finding a venue, because the accessibility in Galway is just shocking. There was 2 venues and decided to go with the Roisin, and they've been amazing. They're like just so supportive of the night, and I think it's like really important that people have a space where they can go meet their friends, have a drink, have a dance. We all do it, so why can't other people, you know?
I popped down to the Roisin Dove to check out Bounce Nightclub. There was a great atmosphere and the DJ sets made sure the dance floor was packed at all times. I bumped into Rebecca, who was there with her brother, Edwin.
This is our third time coming, yes. Activities are very limited and restricted to kind of where we bring them or where Mum brings them, Mum and Dad. So he doesn't really kind of get the opportunity to mix with other people his age or with similar interests. So it's great. It's great. And like, you know, he doesn't necessarily talk or interact with anyone in there, but he's in there dancing. So because it's in a pub, and it's because, say, somewhere myself and both my sisters, we come here like on a Friday or Saturday night. So it's really great to be able to bring him somewhere like age appropriate and kind of like cool and trendy, you know, then he gets to experience that as well.
Chatting to some of the siblings on the night, the topic of future planning came up. Laura and James told me that they've already had a chat about their future plan.
That's one big area, I suppose, is independent living, or, you know, that's something we've kind of discussed. And I suppose James has said he'd like to live with me, and so we're going to try and work on that, yeah. It's something, you know, probably my parents are thinking a lot about now they're getting older, so I suppose my parents don't want to feel pressured to have James live with me, but like, of course, I'd have no problem at all. I'm glad we kind of had the chat, and I think my parents as well are like, you know, yeah, they're just worried constantly, you know, what's going to happen when we die. So yeah, no, it's good that we have some kind of plan in place.
In Waterford, I met Molly at her family home.
Myself and my younger sister Fran, we love, you know, getting into the thick of things. We love being with people. And she's really curious about individuals. Like, she's curious about everything. And I suppose that has been a really positive influence on me, as it's made me kind of more curious.
She told me about her 2 siblings, Fran and Tony.
Like any family, we're, you know, highly dysfunctional in our own way. But there's a lot of love. Both siblings, my brother and my sister, they bring an awful lot to my life. I'm very lucky to have them both in my life. My brother is a quieter kind of person. He loves kind of one-to-one. You know, you'll find him sitting in a corner kind of having a really deep conversation. As opposed to myself and my younger sister, Fran, we love, you know, getting into the thick of things. She's just
fascinated about everything in life. And I suppose, you know, sometimes when you're caught up in the day to day of, you know, working and motherhood and all of this, you kind of lose that sense of, well, actually, there is more in the world than, you know, school runs and Peppa Pig. Also, she is probably one of the best individuals I've ever met around building relationships. So she's really brilliant at figuring out who you are, you know, what are some of your vulnerabilities, what are some of your strengths, and then just nurturing that. I find both my siblings, I have to say, really nice human beings and quite inspiring. Nice, yeah, I'm sure they wouldn't say the same about me, but...
Molly says that her closeness with her siblings when they were kids has remained strong throughout the years, and now as adults, they're all back living close to each other.
Fran, you know, experiences disability, and her clinical reports would have been, you know, really damning. So, you know, it would have been obvious that when we were kids, Fran was different. Because I kind of grew up around it, I never thought about it in a way of, was it different negatively? Because it was just always there. And then as she got older and I got older, and I suppose once I got involved in this work, there would have been different times where would I have, you know, developed my professional development, that I would have learned then around challenging some of those mindsets. Like, I live back in a lovely part of the world, and I live very back close to my two siblings. We're very fortunate that my brother is a farmer, and that my sister and myself are back kind of living together, kind of as siblings often do. And because we grew up in a farm in kind of rural Ireland, we had the opportunity to kind of grow up as kids. It was a very busy household, lots to do on the farm. My brother really did not like school and, you know, really loved being outdoors. And so myself and Fran got to spend quite a lot of time together and just really develop and grow in our relationship. And that's just been lovely, because that has sustained through all of the transitions. Fran, unfortunately, would have been in residential for large periods of her life due to lack of services, lack of appropriate services. And we would have separated because I would have been in college and university. My sister is an incredibly intelligently intuitive woman. We are able to pick up right where we leave off. And she was very generous in leaving me do my thing and leave.
Molly and her family have been helping Fran achieve her goals in life.
When we were trying to figure this stuff out with Fran, you know, we were faced with probably the same challenges that most other families are faced with, you know, and challenges that we face in our own life. Like, what is your life path? Like, what are you going to do? You know, we all do that naturally. We knew that what was being currently offered just wasn't matching Fran's needs. It was just suffocating her as a human being and was just suffocating us as a family. And it was just so disruptive. And so we kind of then started looking at how can we figure this out. And I suppose that, I think, was really helpful, as you're in a process or you're in a service land. And if you're trying to do something differently, it can be really hard for you as a person and also as your family. So what we found hugely beneficial was like getting some really good allies to walk alongside us as a family for a while. We were able to do a path, and we found that hugely beneficial. And one of the big things that came out of that for Fran and for us as a family was the idea that Fran was going to need a home of her own, like everybody else in her family. And so she did that 2 years ago. And so we're having another conversation, all of us together, and trying to learn from Fran what she's going to do with the rest of her life now. You know, because to become a homeowner is a huge thing. And it's then figuring out, well, what are her gifts and talents, and what does she want to bring and give to the world and the community that she lives in?
Helping Irish society to become more inclusive all depends on how people with intellectual disabilities are supported to live in our communities. Molly believes this will help break stereotypes around disability in Ireland today.
As a society, as a group, we constantly make decisions and devalue, you know, we all do. And if people say they don't, they do. Like, there's a certain person you don't want to sit on the bus with, or there's a certain person you don't want to marry, or your daughter you don't want them to marry, you know. So there's all of this nuances, and it's real, and we can't help it, and it's who we are. If somebody is presented in a way that highlights the vulnerabilities they have, they're going to be devalued more and cast into more negative roles and placed in a stereotype. But if that person is supported to show up in an ordinary way and able to support them to develop relationships naturally, well, then it's not that the disability isn't seen, but it's less important. I don't think us educating society does any good. I think it's supporting people to live in their own communities and to have a meaningful day and to do meaningful things with their lives. Then we're teaching each other how we need to be with each other, you know, and it's not a them or us, it's just all of us. You know, a lot of that has come from how services were developed, special day programs. That'd be like saying to five people in a room, because you follow Man United, you're going to have to live together for the next 10 years. You're going to go out in one bus and you're all going to do the same things. If you look at it from a logical level, that makes no sense. What we need to is actually be still with the person, figure out their skills, their gifts, how they can contribute in a really meaningful way, and then support them to do that.
A number of the siblings I've met have said that people telling them they're great for simply spending time with their sibling is strange for them to hear.
I find it really frustrating when people look at you and go, God, you're great. And I know they mean it in the nicest possible way, but it's just so deeply disrespectful. My sister, she has this amazing home. You know, it's just so feminine and lovely and calm and tidy. And there's a jacuzzi bath and there's every type of oil a woman wants. And when she invites me over and I get to spend a night with her, like, I'm in heaven. I'm not doing anything there but just enjoying the fact that I get to hang out with someone I really like. And it's a lovely environment. And, you know, people go, oh, aren't you great? And you're like, well, I'm the one taken here, you know, and we just sit and we have light the fire and I just get to be with her and not have to be anything else but myself. And she does the same. And she just brings that stillness into my life. And we just laugh and giggle as siblings do. And her disability plays no part in that because it's just one part of who she is, the same way I have my nuances and my challenges.
From my journey around Ireland, meeting these amazing siblings, all with their own individual stories to tell, it's clear that no two sibling journeys are the same. Like any relationship, they can be challenging and emotional, but ultimately, for all the brothers and sisters I've met, they felt that their sibling has impacted their life for the better. Dr. Moreland from UCC.
Many of them would say it influenced their career choice and that they went into roles that involved caring or nurturing, or they would say that they would get huge affection from their brother or sister, that many of them had a great sense of humour and that they would share a lot, I suppose, with them. Good, positive kind of interactions. So that was the abiding emotion.
Siblings are becoming increasingly important in the lives of people with intellectual disabilities. Their role is a vital one, and while it can be sometimes overlooked, it's clear from the siblings I've met that they are focused on making sure their brother or sister has a full life and they're challenging areas of society to be more inclusive for them. But above all else, they love their sibling unconditionally. They are their protector, their biggest fan, and most of all, their friend.
I like to go on holidays with my sister because, just as brother and sister, because we never do things like that.
Actually, no, we haven't. We must schedule that in.
What does she mean to me? She means everything to me. And, like, she's made me a better person. She's super, like, I mean, she's just the nicest, kindest person you could ever come across. She's so loving.
Pappy makes me feel calm. Pappy walks into work and no matter how bad the day is until he gets there, it's always just grand when he walks through, because I kind of just... Hey, it'll be all right. Pappy's here now. And I cannot imagine my life without him.
Siblings was produced and presented by Rachel Ryan. Sound editing was by Lachlan Hart. The programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. Inclusion Ireland provides support and advocate for people with intellectual disabilities and their families. You can find out more information at inclusionireland.ie.